Not the silent mode, but just so cool. And just keep your cell phones away from the microphone, please. Good morning, honorable members, and welcome to the Portfolio Committee on Social Development. First of all, let me apologize for us starting a bit late. We had some challenges with our overhead projector. You will hear a noise. Can you just please bear with that little noise? It sounds like the wind howling around the corners of the Mark building. But I think it's so low that we can actually live with it in the week. let me take this opportunity also to welcome Honourable Member Kenya to the committee meeting. Honourable Member, please be welcome. I think it's late. It's the Honourable Member in pink. There she goes. Also, let me take this opportunity to welcome Mr. Mark Schreiner from the United Nations Population Fund. Also have that we will be doing a presentation by this morning, and his colleague. Then we also have members from the Department of Social Development. If you look at the honorable members, if you look at the agenda, we also have a briefing by the Department of Social Development on the War Women Poverty Unit. Lana, the President of Congress, is the representative here.
Chairperson, DG Mbongwa is engaged in a Cabinet Committee meeting at the moment, which is currently running, and he has given us his undertaking that he would, if possible, he would come through. Otherwise, Nasari Luka will go for the presentation.
Thank you very much. I think that's fine. Members, then also just another item on the agenda, which will be very short, is just for us to look at the October program, and then also just touch on a few issues that will be happening in November. That will be the last item. Honourable members, you remember that in the committee meeting we discussed the invitation to of the UNFPA to our committee meeting. Myself and two other members had the privilege of meeting Mr. Mark Schreiner at World Population Day at the University of the Western Cape, and we thought it wise to invite him so that we can explore the kind of a working relationship that the committee could have with him and with the organization, so that in terms of enhancing the oversight role of the committee. And without wasting time, I'll give over to Mr. Schreiner. And after the presentation, we'll engage in a short discussion. And but I'm sure it won't be the first and the last meeting.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members of Parliament, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Yolanda Botha. Just to begin, just to say thank you very much for the opportunity and the privilege from the United Nations and UNFPA to address the Portfolio Committee on Social Development. We wanted to use the opportunity really as an introduction of our work to share with you some of the issues around population and development and how they relate to your work in the Committee on Social Development, to introduce to you a bit about the work of UNFPA within the UN family in South Africa, and hopefully to explore some areas where potentially the UN can support the work of the Portfolio Committee to achieve its goals. I'm joined today by my assistant resident representative, Lakhma Zindala, as well as we're very fortunate to have our colleague, Ms. Krista Kruger from the Department of Social Development with us. The presentation that we prepared and is being circulated to all of you, we've made a few additional slides, which you won't have there. I know when you're visiting Parliament, you always have to be thinking, always have to be responding to the changing environment. And we had a few thoughts overnight, and we added a few slides. We'll also make that available to you, but definitely the presentation in front of you will guide us through the session. As I said, I'm from United Nations Population Fund, UNFPA, and UNFPA is an international development agency of the UN that promotes the right of every man, woman, and child to a life of health and equal opportunity. UNFPA works to support governments and countries to generate and to utilize data to develop policies and programs aimed at reducing poverty, at ensuring that every pregnancy is wanted, every birth is safe, every young person is free of HIV and AIDS, and most importantly, that every girl and woman is treated with dignity and respect. Our work in UNFPA is guided by the International Conference on Population and Development and the 20-year Program of Action. International Conference on Population Development, ICPD, was essentially a gathering of 179 governments 15 years ago in Cairo, which really changed the way that the world views the issues of population, moving away from a focus on numbers to much more of a focus on rights and dignity. And at the Cairo conference, these 179 governments, including South Africa, agreed to work together with partners to achieve universal access to education, especially for girls, reducing infant maternal mortality, and to guarantee reproductive health. Delegates from across the world agreed that every person has a right to sexual and reproductive health, and that empowering women is highly important as an end in itself, and also essential to improving the quality of life of everybody. These goals and principles have now been incorporated into the Millennium Development Goals, the MDGs, and now provide a unifying framework for development cooperation. And with that said, and we have a very solid legal and policy foundation that's been laid over the last 15 years, there still remains a large gap between what's written down and what's affecting people's daily realities. While girls' enrollment in school, for example, has risen along with access to family planning and care during pregnancy, maternal mortality still represents one of the world's largest inequalities. In fact, with women continue to die each and every minute around the world giving birth. Little improvement in this area points to the need for urgent action, both to strengthen health systems and to protect the rights of women and girls. These are population issues. These are some of the issues around population. And you might be asking yourself, what do these population issues have to do with social development? But UNFPA's work, and which is guided by the ICPD, points to the connections between these areas of population, poverty, education, environment, and health. And it helps us to highlight the areas that require urgent action and investment. When we talk about population and development, what does this mean? Really what it's reinforced by is that people are both the means and the ultimate beneficiaries of development. The population dynamics and reproductive health are central to development and need to be an integral part of any poverty reduction strategy. Population indicators are perhaps the most sensitive in determining the extent to which people are benefiting directly from programs of social development. Some of those indicators you'd be very familiar with, including things like population size, the level of urbanization and the rural population, unemployment rates, education composition, age composition, the number of young people in a population, the number of elderly people in a population, what the fertility rate is, what the levels of teenage pregnancy are, what the mortality rates are, child mortality, maternal mortality, what life expectancy at birth is, which percentage of the population has access to water, has access to health services, to electricity, to sanitation, to good housing, etc. These are all population indicators. When we're talking about integrating population into development, we're talking about the need to explicitly consider population in its social, economic, and demographic characteristics at the national, regional, and local development planning processes, as well as determining how some of those indicators that we just looked at can be used to set targets and be used for monitoring and evaluating success in the program. And it's, what's critical is about how we're integrating these population strategies into existing development frameworks that already are taking place, like Vision 2014. In South Africa, of course, we have a national population policy with a vision of the policy being towards contributing towards the establishment of a society that provides high and equitable quality of life for all South Africans, in which population trends are commensurate and sustainable socioeconomic and environmental development. The goal of the policy being to bring about changes for the country's population trends, so that these trends are consistent with the achievement of sustainable development. This is the overall view of South Africa's national population policy. UNFPA is one of the partners that is in the country to help the government and the population implement that national population policy. We're one of the UN agencies of the UN family in South Africa. UNFPA, the UN Population Fund, is working here. This is our third country program in support of the government's programming from 2007 to 2010. In terms of budget and finances, we're operating within a framework of about $13 million, which today's exchange rate is just under 100 million rand. And we're working in terms of our structure. UNFPA South Africa has a national office in Pretoria, where I'm sitting, as well as three sub-offices in KwaZulu-Natal, in the Eastern Cape, and in Limpopo. And each of the sub-offices is headed by a provincial program officer with some light administrative support to assist them. As I highlight, these are the provinces where we're having sub-offices, but it's not restricting our work only to those provinces. We're also working in support of other provinces upon request and through the request of government. At this stage, I'm going to turn to my colleague to also highlight a little bit more specifically some of the program areas that UNFPA is working to give you an idea of the work that we're doing with the government in South Africa.
Thank you very much, Mark. Honorable members, if I can take you through the country program in terms of the actual work we do in this program cycle of 2007 to 2010. Just to inform you members that the program that we are currently undertaking was developed through extensive consultation between government, the UN, as well as important stakeholders within the country, NGOs, community-based organizations, as well as other stakeholders. In terms of the program, the UNFPA drew a lot from government's Vision 2014 because we wanted to ensure that we're making a contribution towards the realization of the country's national development plan rather than doing something on the side. And also, this is conceptualized within the MDGs. And, of course, government prepared a country analysis that informed the areas that UNFPA should focus on. But also in terms of the focus of provinces, as Mark has indicated, the focus was on the provinces with the least progressive socioeconomic indicators. In terms of the program components, we focus on reproductive health, including HIV/AIDS, population and development, as well as gender. The strategy employed by the UN country office at the moment in executing the country program is really trying to respond, to assist government to respond to the prevailing gender inequalities in spite of the legislative framework that is enabling to address these inequalities, and also the limited capacities and weaknesses in sexual and reproductive health services. And of course, as we indicated, that the focus is on these four provinces with the least social progressive socioeconomic indicators. But in addition to that, we work with other provinces on ad hoc and as they request technical support. Our support to those provinces is not standing. In the area of reproductive health, we really are focusing on the prevention element of HIV/AIDS. So we support government in the area of HIV prevention with a very strong focus on young people, both men and women, and also support to women in particular that related to SRH. Also, we're trying to assist government to achieve universal access to HIV/AIDS prevention, treatment, and care and support. Within the UN system, we have the UN Joint Team on HIV/AIDS, and in that team, UNFPA convenes the prevention technical task team. So our intervention is mainly on the prevention side, but to some extent, we support on treatment and care and support. You will see that when we go to even GBV. And also, we're trying to support the strengthening of capacity of healthcare workers so that they are able to deliver high-quality sexual and reproductive health services. In this regard, we can quote our support in capacity building of doctors and nurses on the use of colposcopes for cervical cancer screening. We're training doctors and nurses in the focal provinces on family planning and the family planning decision making tool. In addition to that, I think there is a low female condom uptake in the country, so we're putting a lot of effort on female condom programming, and we're supporting government's SRH M&E efforts. In the area of population and development, what we work on is, in terms of output, is to support government to be able to integrate population concerns and population indicators into development planning and programming, as Mark has indicated. And also, we try and assist government in terms of their ability to generate and analyze data that is policy relevant, including MDG-related data, as we indicated that our program of support is contextualized within the MDG, drawing greatly from Vision 2014. And also, we work very hard on supporting the government establish networks with other countries in the region that have advanced population programs that South Africa can learn from to advance its own programming in the area of population development, and to support just other social partners on the advice of government in terms of their contribution on population and development. On the area on gender, the main focus when the country program was crafted was really with a great emphasis on gender-based violence because of the high prevalence of this social evil at the time. In this regard, we really support government in provision of comprehensive services for women, specifically victims of gender-based violence. But also, I must indicate that since the establishment of the new Ministry on Women, Children, and Persons with Disability, our focus in the area of gender has gone just beyond gender-based violence, and we're supporting government to institutionalize this ministry so that it is able to foster interdepartmental collaboration on gender mainstreaming. So beyond what we had in the country program, we had to refocus our programming on gender to respond to the recent developments within government. And also we try also in this area to assist government that they learn from other countries in the region that have already well-established ministries of gender and also with a track record on interdepartmental collaboration. In terms of the actual work that we do, I would link that with the next slide in terms of accomplishments. On population and development, as we indicated, that we support the generation and use of population data. We're working with institutions of higher learning, such as the University of KwaZulu-Natal, the University of the Northwest, because our thinking is that if we are able to institutionalize this kind of capacity building and have the universities own it, then we are sure of sustainability even when the resources do not allow us. So the approach there is to institutionalize capacity building. So we're developing programs with the universities that respond to the capacity gaps that exist in the country. And then on sexual and reproductive health, we work closely with the Department of Health. On population and development, we work with closely with the Department of Social Development, the Chief Directorate for Population and Development, headed by Jacques Zaidam, and we have our colleague, Krista Kruger, there, whom we work with. And on sexual and reproductive health, we work with the cluster of on maternal and child health. And then on gender, as I indicated, we work with the ministry, but before the ministry was established, we've been working closely with the Department of Cooperative Governance to support the 10-year review of the 15 days campaign. I think in talking to the activities, I have touched on most of the accomplishments that we've been able to achieve thus far. I think one that I did not specifically touch on is the support to Statistics South Africa, because population and development goes beyond the work that is done at the Chief Directorate only to include the census that the whole country is gearing itself towards in 2011. In preparation for the census, we're supporting SSA in doing the post-enumeration survey in advance of the census. I will turn over to my colleagues to take us through to the UN in the South African context. Thank you, Honorable Members.
Thank you. I mean, when we think of the UN, often we think of issues related to peacekeeping, a blue helmet, blue berets, refugee camps, dropping food from the airplanes to people that are in desperate need. The context, of course, in South Africa is different. We're working in a context where the government is fully capable of financing its development program, and therefore the UN's role is different. And the UN's role is really aimed at trying to find strategic areas where we can make a meaningful contribution to the development of policies, but I think more importantly in South Africa, about how those policies can be implemented and that the service delivery can take place and that people have the skills to implement those services. And we recognize that within government there's still technical capacity gaps which are undermining the development of very well-intended policies that are in place. And therefore, that's really the focus of our intervention. As I said, we continue to provide support largely of the technical nature, with a particular emphasis around building the capacity for public servants around the areas of UNFPA's mandate in reproductive health, population and development, and gender. In terms of our UNFPA's work with parliamentarians, we have a long experience. Actually, for about the last 30 years across the world, UNFPA has been working with parliamentarian groups in supporting them to formulate into national and regional groups, particularly around population issues across the world. Today, at the regional level, there's four regional parliamentarian networks on population and development that cover the entire globe. There's one in Asia, there's one in Inter-America, which is largely the Latin American countries, there's one across Europe, and within this region we have the Forum of African and Arab Parliamentarians on Population and Development, FAPED. We're working with these groups and trying to also bridge the relationship between them across the countries and across the regions to benefit from sharing that experience and those lessons. One key area of UNFPA's work in support of parliamentarians and things that we would like to explore with the portfolio committee on how we can assist relates also to increased budget allocation for population and development issues. There's still largely a serious gap that remains. Funding for reproductive health has suffered significantly since the targets were initially set 15 years ago, and that's largly due to HIV and AIDS, and that much of the funding and the development assistance that was aimed for reproductive health has shifted over the last years to HIV and AIDS, which has caused for a gap around reproductive health. UNFPA's mandate is working to try to integrate the response to both HIV and AIDS and reproductive health. We're also working with parliamentarians to try to link population and development issues that we've highlighted today to some of the global agreements, like the Millennium Development Goals, which you have a role in monitoring the country's progress around. Also about, therefore, working with parliamentarian groups to strengthen their capacity to effectively monitor the implementation of those instruments and policies and to really understand how those policies are being implemented and how we can monitor their successful or unsuccessful implementation. As we said, we have many of the laws and the policies have really improved, but the implementation of many of them still remains a challenge. I mentioned that there's regional parliamentarian groups across the world and portfolio committees like yourself in most countries. One of the roles of the UN and UNFPA is to help facilitate exchange between those parliamentarian groups for information, for sharing of lessons learned, best practices that are taking place in other countries, and this is something that UNFPA would be interested in providing support around. Also about the supporting dialogue and cooperation amongst parliamentarians at the regional level, and recognizing especially the role that South Africa has in the region as a leader, as a voice of Africa's issues, both within the region and on the global platform, as a voice to reflect the issues within the African continent. We also work to, which I think is very important as parliamentarians, of how do we translate this population data for real people? How do we put a face to some of these numbers? And I think for me what that means is we need to work with groups like yourself to better produce reports and messages for people who are not working in the population field, so that they can say, yes, I have a role, I can understand what my role is in contributing to population and development, trying to translate some of the numbers and data and put a real face to it, and recognizing that we need to extend partnerships also to non-traditional allies in the implementation of population programs, including the private sector, including especially at the community level. We've tried to highlight today is some of the areas that around population and development and how they relate to social development, introduced what UNFPA does and what we're exploring to support the portfolio committee. In conclusion, what I would say is that there's been a lot of progress made in this country and globally since 1994. We have a lot of laws that have been removed which were restricting access to reproductive health and restricting access to women's rights. We now have many more girls that are attending school than ever before. We have a lot more births that are attended by skilled health personnel. Women and couples are choosing to plan their families, space their pregnancies, and determine the number of children they have. But with that said, there's still millions, in fact 200 million around the world, women who still have an unmet need for family planning, and many women that cannot exercise their reproductive rights to decide freely and responsibly the number of children that they have, spacing of those children, access to education, and so forth. And 500,000 women die each year of complications related to pregnancy and childbirth. In this country, about 154 of every 100,000 births, a woman dies giving birth. So what we know is that the empowerment of women and girls through education, through access to resources, and equal opportunities are important determinants not only of maternal health but of social development. We know what works and we know how much it costs. But what we need is functioning health systems, policies, infrastructure, human resources, supplies, and data. And these are the areas that UNFPA is working to support the governments around. We say that national commitment is key. And when I say national, I don't mean only government, but also academia, civil society, communities, health practitioners. The right policies must be in place, and the financial resources, both domestic and international, must be provided. And I think it's important to set clear accountability lines for all the partners to ensure coordination and joint reporting. partners like UNFPA and the United Nations system must live up to their commitment to provide technical and financial support, and program countries must deliver on their priority outcomes, including securing domestic resources. I think that the time to Vision 2014 and the time to the Millennium Development Goals of 2015 is short and approaching very soon, but I'm confident that the awareness is widespread, momentum is building, strong partnerships are in place, and together I think we can do it. This is the end of our presentation for you, and I'm a believer in how we communicate messages is very important. And I know one of the ways of communicating messages sometimes to be a bit more creative. If you allow me, Honorable Chairperson, we have a very short video, about a two-minute video, which sends a very powerful message about UNFPA's work, about the importance of investing in women and girls. And if the Portfolio Committee would allow us to provide a short video of 2 minutes to get your attention, hopefully, and then perhaps we can have some further discussion around the issue. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schwein and team, for that presentation. I think especially the last presentation is quite an eye-opener how practical it is to find solutions in the place where we live in our community. Now, members, are there any questions of clarity? Any questions that you would like to ask?
Thank you for the presentation. I have just two questions to ask. The one, you said that there's a low female condom uptake. And to my observation, maybe the reason is that it is very complicated. It has got a specific stipulation of time for wearing, rather instead of the male condom. As it is said that it must be worn for a certain period before sexual activities. Therefore, how best can we manage this problem of this condom? So my second question is the 154 maternal deaths in this country. I don't know, because this high mortality rate, if the researchers have got, because it is necessary, what is the real cause of this death? Has the research been done to check the cause of the death? Because it is very difficult to treat the not knowing the cause of this high mortality rate. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is, you said that you have offices in two provinces. I didn't get the explanation why not to the other provinces. And then the second question, we see you are threatening the servant workers. They are there in the villages. We see them walking upside down. The only thing that I want to know that you are also assisting in terms of financing them, giving them stipend or something for them to survive. I thank you, Chair.
Remember, you
mean
up and down,
not
upside down.
Thank you for the question.
That's problem.
Thank you, Chair. I just have only one question. The program is focused to NGOs, CBOs, SBOs, and any other stakeholders. So I just want to know, how do you identify these SBOs and these CBOs and these NGOs? Because by the look of things, these NGOs and CBOs, most of them are located in urban and semi-urban areas, not deep in the rural areas, where the need is, if you can say. Thanks.
I will also at this stage ask that the representative from the Department of Social Development also respond to some of the questions, especially where it's very specific on substance research. Just a question, I think, or comment actually. When we look at your regional cooperation, between parliamentarians, you have a SADC parliamentary forum that I think would be very, very relevant and important for us as a committee to explore engagement with the other portfolio committees of other countries in the SADC region, and that we should do it through the parliamentary forum, and that we did engage on these population issues and these challenges that are facing as a country, to hear how they are dealing with some of these issues. The issues of maternal mortality, I think it's a real issue that is with us, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for raising that. I think Mr. Schreiner, I think an opportunity to reach out to provinces, whether through the NCOP, but to inform the legislature about the role that the UNFPA can play in even supporting their committees, to make sure that when government is planning, because right now we are looking at the annual reports of government, in general, not just social development, but all other departments, whether it's at a national level and at a provincial level, and whether they are incorporating population development policy into their planning cycle. Mm-hmm. They are using it for better planning, because because they are supposed to. We that is a section in terms of our oversight that we have not explored. And that is why it is very important for us to have this partnership with UNFPA and also with the help of social development, especially the population section, to look at how we can really just improve the quality of our oversight if we have if we can employ the population policy adequately. Now, could you, Mr. Shirana, maybe just give us an example of one of the countries in the SADC region that has made great strides, or that you can just comment on in terms of the MDGs, maybe Malawi, for instance, or Botswana. Just comment on the progress they've made. I know that Botswana is faced with a very high HIV/AIDS infection rate, and especially in terms of the age cohorts, the young age cohorts, and that you actually find older people in the villages now doing, in some cases, the work of the young. So they have some challenges. I think even around Namibia, there's also some challenges. But how are they dealing with achieving the targets for the Millennium Development Goals? That's a tall order, just off the cuff.
Thank you, honorable members, for a very interesting question. If I may start with the challenge of low female condom uptake in the country. If we need to respond, as we are doing right now, to increasing the uptake, we need to really understand why there is a low uptake. And the reason that we've identified for that is that there hasn't even been enough education and advocacy on the utilization of this female condom. So the first step before we even increase the uptake is to advocate for the use of the female condom, and then educate the public on the advantages of using a condom or a female condom, because you would notice that with a female condom, the woman is in control, unlike with the other condom. So what we're trying to do is to put in place a comprehensive advocacy program in partnership with the Department of Health. And we need to also demonstrate how the female condom is used. To this effect, we've even procured pelvic models that will be used for demonstration in support of the female condom programming campaign. And then in terms of sub-offices, why UNFPA is working on the three, on the four, not the rest of the country. I think I had indicated that the reason was that we were focusing on the provinces with the least progressive socioeconomic indicators, with the most poor socioeconomic indicators compared to the rest of the country. But also it's a function of resources. We do not want, in the beginning of our program, to spread ourselves too thin within the country as a whole. We might not be able to achieve the impact we want. It makes sense for us to start with the provinces that need immediate attention and support them and do it right. If we are able to make the right impact in those provinces, we can even facilitate cross-fertilization amongst the provinces. But if we start with the nine, I don't think we'll be able to achieve the impact. So we are starting small. So we don't want to be ambitious, but we want to go step by step. And then in terms of strengthening the capacity of healthcare workers and providing them stipends, I think I need to indicate that our support in capacity building for healthcare workers is to have care workers that are employed by the government, that are in the public hospitals. So there is no issue of remuneration. We're dealing with people who are rendering the service. What we are doing is to support them so that they render it right. we know also the challenge of cervical cancer in the country, and that's where really we are providing more support. So at the moment, there is no need to provide stipends because we're working with people who are already public servants. In terms of identification of partners, why we identify NGOs, CBOs, or whatever, at what informs our identification of partners. One, we do not work with a partner and without government endorsement. We really respond to government requests, and in terms of coverage of the partners we work with, they are actually not national or Pretoria-based. We really work with NGOs in rural areas. I would give just an example. In the Eastern Cape, we work with Student Partnership Worldwide, and they are focusing on putting in place youth development centers in the most remote areas in the Eastern Cape. And for an example, if I still use the case of the Eastern Cape, we're working with the Human Rights Commission and the Commission on Gender Equality, trying to see how we can arrive at a public education campaign against forced marriages in the Eastern Cape. So those things are not happening in Sandton. They are happening in the rural areas, in Lusikisiki and what have you. And, yeah, let me turn over to Mark to handle others.
Thank you. I wanted to respond specifically to the question about the maternal mortality ratio in the country. I think this is it's a very important example. The country often experiences, as you deal with daily, the paradox of a very supportive policy and funding environment, yet in this case very high rates of maternal and a very high rates of use of maternal and child health services, yet poor, often worsening health outcomes. And maternal mortality is a good example of that, unfortunately. The Department of Health just recently launched the Confidential Inquiries into Maternal Deaths Report, Saving Mothers Report, it's called, in which we saw the maternal, neonatal, and child mortality has been increasing. The rate I mentioned is 152 per 100,000 deaths. Where at the same time, it's also evident that about 84% of women are giving birth in a health facility, which is quite high, actually. This report, which is looking at the last 3 years, the last triennium, I believe it's 2005 to 2007, has shown that there's an increase of over 20% in the number of deaths reported as opposed to the previous three-year period. So things are worsening. When we look at the causes for this, why? There's really five major causes around the maternal deaths. The first, which is the majority, is around non-pregnancy-related infections. When I say that, I mean HIV and AIDS, which points to the importance of programs that integrate both reproductive health and HIV and AIDS prevention, treatment, care, and support. The second major cause is around complications of hypertension, also obstetric hemorrhage, pregnancy-related sepsis, and pre-existing maternal diseases. These have been identified by the National Department of Health through the report as the five big causes. But there's very clear recommendations and areas that we can support implementation around to respond to that. The first, of course, is trying to improve healthcare knowledge, healthcare provider knowledge on emergency obstetric care, ensuring that adequate screening and treatment of major causes of maternal health are identified early. It's about improving the quality and coverage of reproductive health services. It's about the management of the staffing and the equipment norms, including transport, the availability of blood for transfusion, for example. And I think what's very important is also the area around community involvement and the empowerment around the community regarding maternal reproductive health in general. And even if we look back at the question which my colleague referred to around condom use in the country, I think a lot of the challenges that are faced around sexual and reproductive health issues, be it condom use, be it maternal mortality, they actually point to the challenges and also the opportunities around culture and the enabling rights of women and girls from the perspective of culture and cultural sensitivity. We know that often the cultural traditions and beliefs are often stronger than the laws that are in place, and these are often what's preventing women, for example, from getting to clinics to deliver or use a condom or be able to negotiate condom use with their partner. And what we have to do, I think, is engage in our work at a deeper level to try to facilitate the change of individuals, families, and communities. That's what we mean when we say by being culturally sensitive, by approaching it from that side. The good thing about culture is it's created by people, and people can also change culture. Culture is dynamic. Culture can be changed. So there's also opportunities around that. And cultural sensitive approaches that we need to employ need to try to understand and work with the community's views about what men and women contribute to reproductive health, for example. And I think this points also to the question of working with communities, working with community-based organizations and faith-based organizations, and how we're identifying those partners to work with. And certainly that's something my colleague responded to, but something we can improve upon. And we rely also on groups like yourself to be able to identify the strategic partners at the community level to be able to intervene and approach these issues at the root of the cause, which is often at the cultural beliefs and practices around the issue. There was a few questions and comments and I think ideas around regional cooperation around parliamentarian groups. And I want to just highlight that what the UN and UNFPA's role can be is to try to exchange, to facilitate that exchange between parliamentarians, for sharing of information to know what other parliamentarian groups are doing, to learn some of the lessons and the best practices that are taking place in other countries, and to support that dialogue among parliamentarian groups. I mentioned that there's four regional parliamentarian forums across the world. They're coming together later this month in Addis Ababa, the home of the African Union, to look at the issues around population and development and the progress that's being made, and to foster this dialogue and cooperation between them. We've been speaking to you as UNFPA in South Africa. UNFPA also has a regional office, which is actually based in Johannesburg, which is responsible for UNFPA's work across sub-Saharan Africa. Why I'm highlighting that is because when it comes to these issues about exchange and cooperation between countries, we have an advantage that we have a regional office in the country that has that lens of what's happening across the SADC region and even the other areas across sub-Saharan Africa. And we can explore how to do that. I think another issue, you mentioned, Honorable Chairperson, the role that the Portfolio Committee has around oversight. This is something that UNFPA can work with the Portfolio Committee to understand what these policies are, how to monitor and evaluate the implementation of them, and some capacity around that side. This could also be as simple as we mentioned earlier about how to make the message available for everybody to understand. Another experience that's worked well in other countries is organizing visits, for example, of this portfolio committee to a community to see projects in action, to really see when we're talking about population issues, what does that really mean? What does that really mean in social development? And this is something that we could also explore to organize, both within South Africa and perhaps as part of an exchange with another country in the region. In terms of the progress around the Millennium Development Goals, unfortunately, the progress is quite limited. And the indicators at this point suggest that South Africa is lagging behind on the attainment of most of the Millennium Development Goals, with the exception of Millennium Development Goal 3, which is around promoting gender equality and empowering women. This is common to most of the countries in the region, unfortunately. And this very issue about the achievement and the progress that's being made by countries is going to also be looked at in the next few weeks at the African Union level, where governments are coming together to look at what the implementation has been around ICPD and population and development issues. And the delegation from South Africa, led by the Minister of Social Development, will be representing South Africa at that forum in the next few weeks. Other countries, just off the top of my head, countries that are working quite well and that we might want to explore, is Tanzania. Tanzania has very strong parliamentarian forums, very strong portfolio committees that are playing an important and convening role in monitoring the progress within the country, upholding governments accountable, and very importantly, the relationship and the link they have with the communities of their constituents. And they've been very effective in making sure that that voice is heard at the highest level. So just off the top of my head, Honorable Chairperson, Tanzania could also be a country that might be worth exploring. I hope that we've responded to most of the questions, except if I haven't, please raise them again.
Just to add on support to the National Council of Provinces and seeing what support we can provide beyond just the Committee on Social Development, I think on that area we can take on the suggestions from the committee and we'll be able to respond as such. But since this is our first engagement, we thought we would also get more from the committee in terms of what the committee wants us to intervene in. We really need a lot of information from you beyond what we are doing. There are areas that we've highlighted that you have better ideas in terms of how we advance and actually taking this ICPD agenda even up to the National Council of Province level. That would really something we would greatly appreciate and look forward to. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. According to the presentation, it is clearly saying here that the government has a vast technical capacity gap, which undermines the achievement of the well-intended policies and main challenges in implementation. Presently, if you remember very well, we have the National Child Protection Register that is not operational at all. And we also have the National Sexual Offense Register that is also not operational. Now, in other words, we are losing the battle of protecting women and children in this country. Now, what I wanted to find out, the UNFPA, what they are doing to help us to implement this policy, because the intention is good, we are having the good policy. Is it a question of capacity that we are lacking, or is it the lack of political will, or exactly what is happening? What can they do to help us to implement this good policy in our country?
We've been on recess for, say, a week or so ago, and I went around to quite a few schools, and something that came up was that the teenage pregnancy rate is alarming within schools. What is your finding? What do your figures look like? Are you is it more than your statistics? Is it, you know, what does it look like? I think. Thank you.
Any other honourable members? Honourable Member Machat? Afalat? Honourable Member Kupane? The last one is about the cervical cancer. I used to work for Cancer Association for the past 10 years. We are concerned about the cervical cancer, but the Department of Health is not having the resources. It's not even having people who are skilled to do the cervical screening. So what are you doing to help the Department of Health to improve the resources?
I think what we need to understand in terms of the UNFPA's role is not as a funding, a vehicle of funding, that's correct, in my analysis. But in terms of the implementation of population policy, to make sure that this is the red light switching and how can we address. And I think what has come out in the presentation, and even from Linda's comments, is the fact that we have these policies. I don't think there's anything wrong with the policies in the MS. And I think you've hit the most of the members have hit the nail on the head when you
you say that it's a capacity. How do we make sure that these things happen? And as members of Parliament, how do we make sure that women have access to pap smears and going to a gyne at least once a year? And women have access to all these services. When you have a beautiful hospital, both is just standing as a white elephant to re-agitate and advocate to see that things are happening, you know. And I think the role of parliamentarians in their constituencies is highly undervalued. And we need to look at how, as members of parliament, we really can make a difference in the constituencies where we've been allocated to. Keep government on their toes. I want to go as far as to say you have to become a pain, a huge pain, in terms of getting things done because you're fighting for your constituency. I think these are the tools that is going to help us to really play our role. If you look at the issue of female mortality, we've invested billions of rand over the past 15 years in terms of the primary health care, the secondary hospital establishment. And we've got good academic hospitals, but we don't have enough. So clearly, if we've got the infrastructure, is the message coming past. And then I think the issue of aftercare, Mr. Schreiner. Women give birth in clinics, they go home, they get sick, they die. Somewhere something is wrong. So those things, how do we pick it up? And you can only pick it up when you really go and work in communities, and that is where I actually find the proposal from Mr. Schreiner very interesting, to go to areas as a committee where population policy is being implemented to make service delivery reliable. And that is really important, because local government also have to implement population policy in the planning, in the IDPs. It should be reflected. And you ask yourself, is that really happening? Because if you want to in terms of service delivery, you want to have impact, you have to use all the tools at your disposal in terms of proper planning. Honorable members?
Thank you. Some very, very excellent discussion and dialogue. I wanted to pick up maybe on a few, and then I'll let my colleague also to respond. Specifically, the honorable member who mentioned about visiting schools during the recess and also the high incidence of a teenage pregnancy in the country. It's alarmingly high. And I appreciate also that government is very aware of that, because there's been a lot of response as of late about trying to understand better the causes of teenage pregnancy. I think there's always particular sensitivities around providing reproductive health services to adolescents and young people. But evidence has shown that young women and men are in fact learning to protect themselves against sexually transmitted infections, including HIV and AIDS. Condom use remains low, but there are increasing evidence that condoms are being used more frequently. But while most of the countries, including South Africa, are making efforts to provide sexual and reproductive health services for adolescents and young people, there's still this belief, which is false, which is erroneous, that persists in many places, which is that sexual and reproductive health services encourage sexual activity among young people. By having a service there, that it encourages young people. There's difficulty in many cultures to accept sexuality issues around young people. And I think that points to the need, again, to be working at the community level and to be working from within. Sometimes even married young people whom are married in a relationship can't get the information that they need around their sexual and reproductive health because of their age. I think the other barrier around this, and pointing also to perhaps one of the causes around the high teenage pregnancy is the fact that a lot of the services for young people are done in a very piecemeal approach. There'll be services available for STIs, there'll be services available for maternal health, but they're often not integrated. Often also young people are forced really to go to work to attend an adult, a traditionally adult clinical setting where they may not feel at ease. And often the providers themselves in those facilities aren't comfortable with the moral responsibility of providing services for adolescents and young people. And again, pointing to some of the cultural challenges that are there. For UNFPA, certainly advancing health, the health and rights of young people and adolescents is a major priority, and it's something that we're adamant about making part of our support towards government, and also recognizing the need for an interdepartmental approach when it comes to young people, a holistic approach that cuts across the different departments within government to support adolescents and young people.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. I think even the second round of questions is getting more interesting. In terms of the registers that are not working in the country, an example, there are two examples that were given: the National Sexual Offences Register, the National Child Protection Register. Of course, these are the two registers that UNFPA has not been involved with specifically. But I think in terms of response, one can say our support is mainly to train officials who are responsible. In this case, it's not specifically these registers because we have not dealt with them directly, who are responsible for data administration. As you would remember, in some of the outputs we said we work on was to assist government to generate policy-relevant data, including MDG relevant indicators. So in this case, these are specifics that UNFPA has not dealt with, but as we indicated, we respond on a request basis. This we have not dealt with, but also the question of the low capacity in administering these registers, it goes just beyond the issues of political will. I think from where we are sitting in South Africa, there is no issue of political will. Really, our politicians are committed to making these things work, but you find that there is high turnover amongst the people who should be administering these registers, right? So in terms of solving these problems, there is work that government can do in terms of retaining people, and there is a role, that a supportive role specifically, that UNFPA and other UN agencies can play in making sure that these registers work. In this case, Paris, I would want to introduce that there is the UN beyond UNFPA on the child protection register. I am sure if we engage our colleagues from UNICEF, they will stand ready to assist. And then on the sexual offences, these are some of the examples that members can actually start writing to us so that we respond and provide the necessary support. And then on cervical cancer screening and the issue of the minimal resources that the Department of Health has to be able to provide comprehensive cervical cancer screening services, I just want to build on the response that was given by the Honorable Chairperson that the UNFPA is not about providing more financial support. Our strength is mainly on technical support, and in this regard, you will appreciate that we really are, there are, in some instances, we actually bought colposcopes for the Department of Health to utilize, and in addition to the colposcopes that we have bought, we are training doctors and nurses on their use for cervical cancer screening, and we institutionalizing it with the University of Pretoria so that beyond UNFPA it remains in the country. And then also on the issue of resources, again, the issue of sharing responsibility. This is an area also where honorable members can advocate for allocation of more resources for cervical cancer screening while UNFPA comes to the party with technical capacity building for the doctors. And then on teenage pregnancy, Mark gave us a very comprehensive response, but I just want to add that beyond the UNFPA, actually the studies that have been conducted on teenage pregnancy. One was conducted by the Department of Education with technical and financial support from the United Nations Children's Fund. And the Department of Health also did a study on teenage pregnancy, but the two were looking at teenage pregnancy from different angles. And the one that was done by the Department of Health was supported by the World Health Organization. So there is a lot of support that is coming from the UN beyond just UNFPA on areas of government concern. I thank you, members.
Well, thank you very much. Honourable members, you have exhausted all the questions, but I think what is very clear is that we have not concluded our discussion with the UNFPA. The committee will deliberate on the issues that have been raised in the presentation, and then we will come back to you on further engagement. But I think we all see it as the first stage of engagement, and we're very thankful for that. I just want to alert members that you, besides UNICEF, which we had a presentation of UNICEF, you also have the United Nations Office of Drugs and Crime, and there we can also link up with them on certain projects that they are doing, latch onto what they are doing, mm-hmm. and see also how they can be of assistance to the portfolio committee. I don't know whether social development would like to add anything at this stage before we conclude.
Honourable members, it seems to us as if the major challenge will be the collaboration between various departments, that is Department of Health, Department of Social Development, as well as the General Ministry, and to a certain extent also SAFSA. As we've discovered this morning, it is not only social development that's involved in population and development. And if it's possible for the portfolio committee to support that kind of mechanism between the various ministries, that will assist a great deal, not only social development and population development, but also the UNFPA and their support to South Africa and the whole population development program. It's also apparent that the capacity is lacking across government, and that's also true within the population development field, and capacity not as much of people not knowing how to do their job, but not enough people to do the job. And because we are not enough people to do the job, we cannot really reach local government, for instance. And if the portfolio committee members can advocate for more support within the provinces especially, that will be of great assistance to population development. In terms of the international liaison, we will definitely would like to come back as our chief director to give a briefing to the portfolio committee on all our international engagements, because there are quite a number, and we also appreciate the support of the chairperson in all of these activities. I also believe that the chairperson as well as our chief director will have a meeting tomorrow on certain international sizes. I think those are the most important matters. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. This concludes, honourable members, the presentation and the discussion on the agenda point, the briefing by the UNFPA, and we wanted to say thank you very much, and sorry about the inconvenience that you suffered in terms of logistics, but thank you very much for really adding value and opening up our eyes to how we can reach our oversight role, but also in terms of how we can improve by some intervention the lives of our constituents. Thank you very much. Honourable members, would you like to have a 3-minute body break?
please remember that I was a teacher, my previous life, I was
thank you, Honorable Chair and members. I'm stepping into bigger boots because this is the presidency's presentation, and DG Mbongwa is not here yet, but I will give it a shot, and then at the end of this presentation, I will also zoom a little bit on the sector presentation, which specifically refers to social development activities and roles. In terms of background, the presentation is structured in this manner. It will provide us with the background, the approach, how the war on poverty has been institutionalized, and the rollout plan 2009 to 2014, the program benefits and recommendations. In terms of the background, the presentation actually just reflects on the current situation and what is the current situation and what is existing. The 10-year review has showed that there are existing anti-poverty approaches, but at the end of the day, we still have 43% of people who are still trapped in poverty, and there is no common anti-poverty strategy, no information about the conditions of the poor, and no monitoring of anti-poverty initiatives, ad hoc, unaligned, and uncoordinated services, and the poor not being able to access available services. And there is also a study that was done by the Department of Social Development in the nodal area. And from that study, we have noted that urban poverty is rising, and rural poverty decline is also slowing down, and that rural poverty was over twice urban poverty. The nature and scope of anti-poverty initiatives. We will note that those that are poor actually suffer multiple service deprivation as well as deficiencies. Most of the people who are still trapped in poverty do not have access to human development services, infrastructure services, governance and administration services, justice and crime prevention, social services, as well as economic services. So the poor are actually deprived in many ways in terms of accessing services as well as in terms of utilizing those services. And here is simply just the understanding of what poverty is, chronic poverty being prolonged stay in worsening human conditions of deprivation and capability deficiencies, and there are different dimensions of poverty. There's poverty where people do not have income or do have access to low income and earning opportunities, lack of access to basic services, low individual and collective assets, low human development indices, low social development indices, racial and spatial manifestations of poverty. And the scope of poverty cuts across all sectors, clusters, and spheres of government, state and non-state sectors. This is just a pictorial of which shows the dimensions of poverty and how poverty is spread, and which actually just gives us information about where people are and that there are many who are still excluded from services such as food security. People do not have access to water, and it's a whole list of services where people still do not have adequate access. And this actually means that there are still many people out there who are suffering from exclusion or who are excluded. The war on poverty is actually responding to the mandate of the party and the Polokwane resolution. And this refers to the issues around ensuring that as a country we define clearly the poverty metrics of our country. We develop a database of households that are living in poverty. We identify and implement specific interventions relevant to these households. We monitor progress in these households as programs take effect in graduating them out of poverty. We address all indigents, especially the high numbers of women who are affected. And we also examined the experiences of other countries such as Tunisia and Chile and to ascertain some defects in our system, coordinate and align anti-poverty programs to maximize impact and avoid wastage and duplication, accelerate training of social workers at professional and ancillary levels to ensure that identified households are monitored and supported, and also promote the intensification of the joint effort of all South Africans to promote social cohesion and human solidarity. Now, this mandate is actually responding to the initial challenges that were mentioned in the background, that there are still people out there who are suffering poverty, and we don't really have an understanding of the type of poverty and how this poverty is spread and what the situation of households are and the extent to which they do access or don't access services. So this mandate is actually responding to those issues that were raised. And in terms of institutionalizing the new mandate, the comprehensive anti-poverty strategy has been developed, and that this process was led by a presidency. And we also have to adopt a household-based approach to poverty in order to deal with the specific challenges at the household level. And the War on Poverty campaign was then initiated, also led by the presidency, and the National War Room established within the presidency. The presidency is the champion of the War on Poverty, and the deputy president is the public face of the War on Poverty campaign. And the presidency is also responsible for coordination and integration of service delivery across spheres of government and social partners. At provincial and local level, we've got the premiers and the mayors and councillors as provincial and local champions. And we do also have partners in this effort to fight against poverty, which is the state-owned enterprises, businesses, civil society, and donor organizations. And still, in terms of institutionalizing the new mandate, and as indicated earlier on, that the National War Room is located in the presidency, and the National War Room comprises the project manager, the project team, and the national task team. And at the national task team level, that is where you find all the departments, and including the state-owned enterprises, including development agencies that are all comprising or making up the national task team. And a war room is also supported by FOSAT, the social and economic cluster. The terms of reference of the national war room is to establish provincial and municipal war rooms, to divide the country into manageable spaces, to identify poor urban and rural wards, to select three areas to run pilots, and to supervise the work of project teams, to enlist the participation of public representatives, to mobilize non-governmental organizations and the private sector to participate, to develop a template to profile poor households, to identify households and individuals living in poverty, identify and train cadres for door-to-door visits, and develop a referral system for government response, enlist participation of poor households, provide immediate and available interventions, facilitate medium to long-term interventions, build a database and monitoring system, align and coordinate government interventions, develop a communication strategy, and inform the comprehensive anti-poverty strategy and government work after the 2009 elections. And in terms of still going on into the institutionalization of the mandate, the first launch was in the Free State, and the whole process was identifying the most deprived wards. And this is the same process is used in all the other provinces where the launches have taken place. The issue was to identify the deprived wards, and in this instance, in the Free State, for example, it was in Maludia Pofung. And then in terms of the province has been identified and the poorest ward has been identified, then the process of identifying and also analyzing and assessing the situation in that particular ward takes place. For example, in this particular ward, Jacobsdal was identified as one of the most poorest wards, and the characteristic features of this particular municipality or this particular area also has been identified. A small town, basic services available to most, etc. So in all the wards, once the ward has been identified, then the process of assessing the ward takes place so that you are able to get the information of what is happening in that particular ward before you go into the specific household. And this information is important because you're able to understand what the situation is. You're also able to understand where opportunities are and where the constraints are, so that once the household profiling has been done, then the programs will be informed by both the situation at community level, but also within the household. And then in terms of the door-to-door, households were visited, and in every household, there would be there's a questionnaire that is developed to establish what services the household is able to access, but most of all, what is actually the situation in that particular household. And these are the different households, unemployed, you know, the issue of substance abuse, grand abuse, high school dropout and teenage pregnancy, shame and anger, not to be able to defend oneself or to fend for oneself. So these are some of the issues that were identified. And in terms of services delivered after the household profiling was done, for example, vital documents where you can see here the Home Affairs taking details and ensuring that this family is able to access to get the vital documents that they need. And these were the outcome of that process. The issue of grants also, the distribution of food hampers, the issue of health care, education, because in one household you will find that there is actually lots of issues that are identified. And what is important is that once the issues have been identified, an integrated approach should be adopted to address those particular issues. Where, for example, the family, there's one person who does not have vital documents and may not be accessing grants, and there's also the issue of food insecurity, healthcare, etc. All those issues would then be used to develop a basket of services which is integrated for that particular household. The issue of housing and household assets, etc. So these are the services that were delivered, but also what informs those services that are delivered. For example, if you talk about household assets, it is important to establish what assets a particular household has, because the focus should not only be on needs, but it should also be on the strength of that particular household. Now, in terms of assets, you will find that if a household has got access to land, for example, this is where, you know, you talk about household assets, where, you know, people, what is it that people have, and what is it that was provided to be to ensure that that particular household has got access to some of the assets that could assist them to be able to address their situation. And where there were challenges, again, in terms of psychosocial needs, then psychosocial support was provided by the relevant social workers. The issue of personal assets, what is it that the person has as an individual? Early childhood education, mental health, youth skills development, soil and water works. So these were all the services that were provided in those areas where the needs were identified, and this was government's response in terms of delivering those specific services. These are the veggie tunnels that have been rolled out in these particular areas. And in this type of situation, that is where you'll find that households are clustered. For example, three households would actually own one tunnel, and they take responsibility in terms of managing and maintaining the tunnel. And what is happening now in those particular areas, they actually are able to eat from the tunnel, but also sell and be able to meet and address other issues. But what is also very important is that these are some of the activities that have contributed towards families being able to complement the grants that they get, because the grants in itself is not enough. But if they do have access to food, or they can even sell to the local market, they are able to stretch the grant that they receive, and at least they are able to sustain their livelihood. These are all the pictorials in terms of the services and the briefings, etc. The national rollout plan from 2009, from this financial year to 2014. The plan is that in year one, which is 9-10, the war room will target 12 districts, and the number of municipalities about 36, and the number of wards 152, number of households 303, and then the estimated number of household members 1.5 million. As I indicated earlier on, that this program is led by presidency, I would not be able to indicate at this point in time how far the whole process is in terms of rolling out this plan in the number of wards that have been identified. And then year two, the plan is to extend that to double the 152 wards to 356, and then year three, 345, year four, 275, because the focus is actually on at a ward level rather than at a municipality level. But what is important is that the provinces themselves, with the assistance of STEP South Africa, are identifying those wards where these initiatives should be targeted. And within those wards, it is again the communities in those wards that would also participate in the identification of the poor households in those specific wards. The key pillars of the War on Poverty campaign is that it's that of diagnosing poverty, as well as profiling individuals as well as households, but also taking the profiles to a community level. Now, once that information has been gathered, then that information must be packaged and managed carefully, and that is where the poverty information management and referral system come in. And the Department of Social Development is playing a crucial role there in terms of the rollout of the Social Development Information Management System, which is called the Social Development Information Management System. Now, that system is used to refer. For example, if in one household there's a need for ID documents, then using that system, that particular household or that particular person would then be referred to the Department of Home Affairs. So it is used for referrals, either internally or even externally. Communications and social mobilization is a third pillar, because it's important that communication is provided. So we need to have a very strong and good communication strategy, but also the society and people have to be mobilized to be able to understand what is happening and what their role is. The fourth pillar is programs and service delivery coordination. In the beginning, in the background, we have indicated that there has been service delivery has been fragmented, and there has not been alignment between service delivery components. So it's important that service delivery is coordinated to make meaningful and significant impact. And the fifth phase is households monitoring, and as well as graduation. The key instruments and service delivery areas at the community level, we've got, for example, community workers who can be community development workers and community development practitioners, but we also do have programs and initiatives that are implemented at the community level. There are services that are provided, and there are also facilities that are provided. But at that level, it's important to establish what the situation is so that the services and whatever programs and plans should respond to the challenges at that level. At the household level, it's also to assess the type of the location, the dwelling type, and also to establish what the human development indices are and what type of services are required at the household level and the extent to which those households can access those types of services. And at an individual level, it's also profiling an individual to establish the type of human capital that is existing in a household. And at that level, it is whether that person or the status of health, income levels, the skills levels, education levels, and whether the person is accessing social insurance as well as social assistance. That information in itself enables the program to be able to respond to the needs of people from an individual up to a community level. Implementation of the War on Poverty framework, where do we start? We start by obtaining of a political endorsement, establishing war rooms, selecting the poor wards, and training of change agents, as well as the training of field staff. In terms of the change agents, it's not only training, but identifying the change agents, because in each and every community, there is a person who is a change agent in his or her own right. So it is important to identify those people because they're actually the drivers or the engine of development in those particular localities. Now, once that process has been done, then the profiling of households would be done through door-to-door visits, and the data would be captured and stored. But parallel to that, it's also important to do a community profile because the opportunities and challenges that are identified at a household level should also be linked to the opportunities and challenges at the community level. The program that is developed should be able to respond to both. For example, if in a household there is a person who's got agricultural knowledge, for example, and then in the community there is access to land, the program should aim at linking the two. Or if there is access to land, but there is no capacity and there is no knowledge about agriculture, then the program should also ensure respond in terms of bridging that gap and ensuring that they provide the appropriate training and appropriate capacity building programs. Now, the information that is obtained at a community level is also fed into the IDP processes because that will therefore inform what needs to be done in the short term, in the medium term, and in the long term, what norms and standards should be put in place, etc. And then at a household level, there's also information that has got to be stored, as I indicated, but that information is also used to generate service referrals to departments. In a household where there is a person who is requiring welfare services, that information would be captured, but then it would be used to refer that person for appropriate welfare services. If that person requires any other service, whether it is housing or whatever, that information will be used to refer that person to the appropriate department. And then there are also systems that ensure that the information is verified and that there is also feedback to households, feedback to communities, to municipalities, to provinces, as well as at a national level. So that framework starts from the process of getting buy-in, and then from buy-in to actually assessing the household as well as the community, establishing what constraints, what opportunities, and what challenges are existing in both, and then packaging that information, referring it for IDP planning, quality assuring the information, generating referrals, and then also making sure that whatever services that were delivered, there is also feedback in terms of what has been done and what has not been done. This one is simply defining the types of poverty traps and what the poverty traps would refer to, would cause, or what would be the outcome of that. Insecurity, limited citizenship. Insecurity in the sense that those that are trapped in poverty would always be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. If you are poor, then you know you are easily violated. You are the most vulnerable. Although vulnerability is not only for the poor, you know, it doesn't mean that only the poor are vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But if you are poor, you are the most vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And then you also don't have a voice because your citizenship rights are very limited. If you are poor, you don't have a voice. You've got little representation, and we know that within the development domain, there are also power relations. And if you are poor, you really don't have power, you don't have voice. So you cannot even exercise your citizenship rights. There's also that special disadvantage. If you live in remote, neglected rural areas, or you live in small, marginalized areas, then you become more disadvantaged than those who are living in areas that are close to facilities and services. There's also the issue of social discrimination, denied choice and limited scope to move out of poverty, which says that it is important as government and even as departments to ensure that dealing with the poor does not disempower them further. It actually ensures that they are empowered. So it also says to us, we must also look at our approaches, our development approaches. Are our approaches continuously disempowering people, or are our approaches empowering people so that they can be able to stand in future and be able to access and fight for their own rights? Poor income opportunities, which result in limited sustainable livelihoods. The household graduation process was once the household is placed in, or the household has been assessed and there are services that have been provided. That process, the household must move from a situation of lack to a situation where they have something that they can relate to. Now, the process starts, we've got two phases. It's the state-supported phase and the self-sustaining phase. Now, within social development, and if I say social development, I'm not meaning social development as a department, but social development as a sector. The social development framework, or the comprehensive social development framework, starts from protection to transformation. And if you look at this household graduation process, it fits well within the social development or the comprehensive social development framework. For example, the identification phase, where you identify the most deprived wards and you profile poor households in those wards, you identify their needs and you capture their needs into the database. Then actually within the social development framework, that is the element of protection. Because once they have been identified, something must be done to protect those poor households within their own localities. And then the stabilization phase, where you refer those needs to departments, where you render non-negotiable services. For example, if a person requires psychosocial support, that is a non-negotiable service. That person must get that service there and then in the short term. If the person requires a grant, that grant must be made available. But then there are also short-term services. Now, this element within the social or the comprehensive social protection framework, that is prevention. Because once you start protection, you must also put systems in place that ensures that this particular household or individual does not fall back into the poverty trap. So you must also ensure that there is support provided. And the support will be provided by those specific departments that have got to provide that particular service. The development phase, that is where you render medium and long-term services. Now, within the social, the comprehensive social development framework, that is about promotion. Because now here, once you have stabilized the household or stabilized the lives of those people in that particular area, you've got to start promoting a situation where they're able to diversify their livelihood strategies. And you can do that through education, through skills training, through linking them to appropriate opportunities for income generation, as well as strengthening their livelihoods. And the last phase here, which is self-sustaining, in the social protection framework, that is where we talk about transformation, where the household is able, or the community is transformed, and it has become empowered. And that is the consolidation phase. Self-generated sustainable income opportunities and the graduation phase. Now, within the social development framework, that is where you link the sustainable livelihood to the value chain, because then that would ensure that the household or the community is able to generate sustainable income from their engagement in the total and participation in the total value chain. I don't think I have to go into this, but this is just the national war room structure. The project manager is the DG Mbongwa, and that's how it is structured at presidency. And the mandate is to set the framework, the norms and the standards, to align, to integrate, to coordinate, to supervise, to support and monitor all anti-poverty programs, the role of the forum, or to establish the forums where spheres of government hold a common approach to poverty, to also ensure that they establish a command center where the leadership, the programs, and the human and financial resources are requested or requisitioned and directed to the needs of the poor, a repository of experiences and best practices, and the database kept, established and kept, and wielding spheres of government into an integrated plan to deliver services and monitoring progress in terms of delivery of services and the extent to which the poor are graduated out of poverty. I think that is the last slide, if I'm not wrong. Thanks, Chairperson. I don't know whether I should go into the specific DSD one or maybe take a few questions that I can respond to.
Is there any questions that members would ask now before we go over to the DSD this session? This was honorable members, if you remember correctly, as per our request that we said we want to get a presentation from the presidency around the volume of poverty. So this is the presentation. Honorable Member Nelson. In terms of the role of for 209 to 10, I'm just trying to get to that slide. How far are we in terms of meeting targets for this financial year, or how far are we into the program for this financial year? Thank you.
Just to add on to this question of Honourable Nelson, who monitors this program? Because I was fortunate to work with one of the MECs during the recent period on this program, and people there are tremendous challenges facing us in this program, especially in the rural areas. Who does the monitoring?
Thanks a lot, Chairperson. I was also interested on the monitoring and evaluation that takes place. To me, there was a role of a pilot for the state. And what I'd like to know there is, was there an improvement, even if it is a year old, in the improvement of the quality of life? Number one is monitoring evaluation, how does it take place? And then just this year, was the improvement when it comes to the research? And this whole project is an integrated approach. All departments responding. Thank you.
Just one question, Sadi. This is Luca. The gentleman that joined you is at DJ Bongwa.
Yes.
DJ Bongwa, welcome to the Portfolio Committee for Social Development. Ms. Luca just finished the presentation on the war on poverty. So we're just taking questions on the presentation. Maybe just after the presentation, after the questions, whether you would like to add anything, please feel free to do so.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to follow up on the rollout plan, I think if we can also, I think it would be necessary, if we say there are 12 districts in this financial year, which are the 12 districts, if we can have them by name, which are the 36 municipalities and which are the 152 wards, so that we can drill down exactly as to where this program is taking place. Thank you, Chair.
Mine is a very short one, is on what are the three selected areas to run the pilot, to start the pilot in, and then
supervise the work of projects that we spoke on that one. The other one is accelerate training of social workers at professional and ancillary levels to ensure that identified households are monitored and supported. How do you intend doing that? Is there any strategy in place? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Now I've got only just two questions. This information is clear and it's wonderful. It gives us a direction, of course. But now my question is, do the provincial, regional, and local offices have this information? Because it so happened for me to be in one of the areas in Eastern Cape where the local leader didn't even know what I was talking about. Was that starting? He knows nothing. Now there is a problem with the structuring of the social development structure. There is a provincial structure, there is a district structure which is in the district municipality, there is a local office. Then if the information is coming from the local office, it goes to the district, and then from the district to the province. It's where the things disappear. So I just want to know from the Department of Social Development, are you aware of the information dissemination, and how can that be rectified? And number two, poverty is all over. How do we identify these districts? What criteria do we use? Or does the district just say, oh, my area is poor, and my area is poor, and my area is poor? What about the other areas? How do we identify this district so that we spread this program of the National Rural Plan? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Matthew asked, there's one question that was already asked, but I would like to link up with the Eastern Cape. I'm from that province. I think I'm speaking under correction when it comes to the municipalities that were identified. I think it's about 9 to 10. And that's why I asked, on the monitoring. What I would like to know is, how do you know, because it's linked to this question, that of the Honourable Member, that delivery to the poor is taking place there. Because these are the 9 municipalities were introduced, I think, about 2 or 3 years ago, that these are the areas that are going to target when it comes to the war on poverty. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. I think our questions are more linked to one another because also I'm also concerned about the monitoring. Mm-hmm. It is good to have this monitoring and evaluation team in the Office of the Presidency, but if it doesn't disseminate down there to the lowest level of the spheres of government, it will make no difference. So my question is this. Are there any teams in all these spheres of government for the monitoring and evaluation so that the processes are disseminated down there up to the communities which are talking about? Because we say the key social delivery areas are from national to an individual. Is there a strategy that all of the spheres of government, there are monitoring and offices, there is a place for the monitoring and evaluation team or office in all of them? Thank you. Only the 3 of them. Thank you.
Thank you. Mine is also a very short one on develop a communication strategy. Was the strategy drawn up? And is it possible to have a copy of the strategy, the communication strategy, especially the one that you people intend to use? Intent using in the rural areas. Thank you.
DG, I want to ask you a question, and I don't know whether I'm going to put you on the spot, but
Maybe you can tell us whether it's possible or not. Maybe just off the cuff, summary of what is happening in the different provinces. Maybe just to say there is this program running. It's coordinated by the previous Office of Social Development, Mr. Champion. Not the detail of the project, but just to say there is something happening or there's nothing happening. You know, I know we know that you haven't prepared for it, but I saw something in Sally Luca's presentation also, and maybe we could marry the two in terms of the information that we have there, in terms of the projects that are running.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My sincere apologies for not making it on time. To the question, if I understood it well, Chair, is that is there something happening? Yes, there is, across all the provinces. As we speak now, the provinces of KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Gauteng, and Limpopo have profiled, I'll explain that to the members, a total of more than 20,000 households. The profiling of the household is extremely important for us because out of that profiling would come what we call referral to various departments and service providers. And having referred the needs of the households to those service providers, we pursue those departments relentlessly in terms of delivery. Then comes the issue that I've had the members talk to of monitoring and evaluation. And we set ourselves specific objectives as a national task team, one of which is, Chair, that within 90 days, what we call non-negotiable deliverables must have been delivered. What is non-negotiable deliveries? Birth certificates, the registration of kids to the early child development centers, that all those that you do not need any gauge, they should have been done within 90 days, 3 months. Beyond that, we look into what we call medium to long term. Now, maybe I should pause, Madam, so that I hear further what I might have missed out. Certainly, the other provinces have chosen. We took some time until the political leadership in each of the provinces had confirmed the areas we proposed to them in terms of these within your province are the most deprived. There is a specific criteria which we draw from Stats South Africa. For all the provinces, it ranks these areas from the worst to the least deprived. So we go to the political leadership and we say, according to the information from State South Africa, these are the areas. They have usually reacted in three ways. They've confirmed and added some of the things. So wherever we've gone, we've not had less, we've had more areas chosen. In some areas, such as Northwest, there's still a debate purely because some members, particularly at the council level in the municipalities, want all their areas to be on. So the delay has been on that point rather than to say this area is worse. Members, the councillors usually want all their areas and wards to be included. So there's a delay, particularly in the Northwest. But other provinces now have confirmed. Maybe let me pause, Chair, and hear whether I've answered to your specification.
Thanks a lot, Chairperson. I asked specifically too about a pilot project.
project in the Free State. Because here, the DG is speaking about, you know, within 90 days there are non-negotiables. So I'm just looking for that slide. Because there's something for 6 months and all that. So I would like to know, did it improve the quality of life of the people there? What was really done? Because look at that project is now a year old. It started in August 2008 and we passed August 2009. So I think that is a very small request. I'd like to thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just to follow up on the day delay in the northwest. Which minister for the delay? Thank you, Chair. Okay. Okay, umbuzo nje baba bengifuna ukuqonda ngeKwaZulu Natal ukuthi iyiphi indawo enikuyona njengamanje KwaZulu Natal and then naseGauteng because ngihlala eGauteng ngifuna ukuthi ngikwazi ukuthi ngoba ngiyakhona ukufinyelela kulezo ndawo zombili kheze then ngiyobona ukuthi okay nikuphi nenzani eGauteng ngiyobheka futhi nakhona ukuthi nikuphi nenzani ngoba ma uzositshela ngeKwaZulu Natal inkulu kakhulu KwaZulu Natal ziningi-ke ilokhuzana ezifana nani, i-organization ezifana nani, nazo ezingama-organization azimela ezenza nawo le msebenzi. Thole mhlawumbe uzomenshina indawo yomunye umuntu eyenziwa ngomunye umuntu. Nangifuna ukuyoyazi ngazi bani, ofisini likuphi lapho kanye ne-office noma kunomuntu enibabeke lapha enisebenzisana nabo engingafike ngibuze kubona uba yini ngempela enenza lokhu la ngoba sesikhathele abantu abathi senza lokho ekhezeteni senza lokho eGauteng ngoba iGauteng inkulu. Mina ngihlala eGreater Johannesburg region, kukhona iGreater region, kukhona inini. At least ube specific, ngikwazi ukuthi at least uma ngiya ngazi ukuthi ngiyakubani, sengibuze bani ukuthi nenze ini nani, ngibe sure. Ngiyabonga.
I just want to know the Western Cape. Did the Western Cape identify their areas? And has the pilot projects been started in the Western Cape? Thank you.
I just want to remind members that this is, the War Room of Poverty is not just a 2009 project, it doesn't start in 2009. It started last year, my memory says the correct DG. When did the War Room of Poverty kick off? Was it last year? Yeah. But it's gaining momentum, so it's been rolled out to every province. So I want you to keep that in mind. So for monitoring and evaluation purposes, DG, can you tell me whether there could be, whether you have evaluated any of the existing projects that kicked off last year already? Although we know they're not near completion, but at least you have about 12 months of it being in existence.
Thank you, Chair. How we proceeded, particularly with the last year's kickoff period, was when we went into an area and households, and after having profiled them, we went down the list in terms of saying these are the needs that are there, and most of them, if not all, in fact, Chair, were short-term. I don't know whether the presentation did show the roads, the earthworks and some others. Those are more the long-term ones. But the whole idea was to see whether we could deal with the most immediate and the most pressing. And many of those were like the food hampers, the birth certificates, death certificates. And to answer more always, Chair, when we go, SASA is there, Home Affairs is there, the police are there, because of the affidavits and the rest. And so in terms of those, to answer the question, in as far as the impact is concerned, we have not assessed, but the need that we're dealing with, we said that you didn't have a birth certificate, now you have a birth certificate. Mm-hmm. It affords one then to go and apply. And we have not yet assessed, Chair, I must be frank here, in terms of, with the birth certificate obtained, have the people then used it in terms of what they wanted, because it's most likely that they wanted to register a child. Some wanted to write exams. We have a more tragic case of the in KZN where somebody didn't have the ID and such like. So they are the most immediate in that manner. But sure, we've not certainly done the impact assessment. There's only one child we are following in Free State, whom the Deputy President picked up. She's now registered in a nursing school. It's her first year, and we are monitoring her as she proceeds and completes. That's one of the cases which we are following in terms of the improvement. There is a gentleman of 8-year-old in Limpopo, where the members of the team, together with some others that were participating, built a house from scratch. And then it is there, he's occupying it, and now he's got some other needs in terms of filling it up with this and that. The other impact, but this is very, very not a more thorough one, is where we had built, facilitated the building of a CD center. And the officials, maybe you could say they complained, to say the children around that area in Hakata, in Limpopo, are mushrooming from nowhere. But we think that the impact of having built the center and the children are now utilizing it, because they used to say that area doesn't have children. But you know, it's usually a coping mechanism of our families. Where there's no facility or they put them elsewhere. We built that center, the children, in the language of the officials, they must go somewhere. But again, we've not yet done a thorough assessment. I think of the areas that we've assessed, tried to assess, but not to the best of the questions as emerging from the members' chair, is Limpopo and the Northwest, because there, in terms of the list that we had to be met, they are the ones that scored 100% in as far as what they were supposed to do. I think we could take the suggestion of the members to say, now go and assess exactly the impact and the use of those services. The Western Cape project never formally launched in the manner that we used to do, either with the Premier or the Minister or the Deputy President, but there was a jamboree in Delft that took place. Now, in addition to Delft, there are other areas, a total of, I think it's 7. I'm looking onto my computer. The Western Cape is also on board. It's Eden, and I think the Winelands. Might be missing some other districts with some municipalities there. Thank you, Chair.
I think that just to add on what DG has indicated, we also in social development are coordinating the submission of reports from all the provinces. It's still a bit slow, but at the moment we have received, for example, 2 reports from Mpumalanga, because we call them the post-launch provincial activities. In Mpumalanga, for example, 24 wards have been targeted, and those are the wards. And the achievements in that particular one, they have already established their local war rooms, and they've got 53 data collectors who have been trained, and 10 field workers. And in Nkomazi, there's an ECD center and an HCDC, home community-based care, that are funded, school uniforms provided, and all those. We want to actually know what is happening so that we are able to facilitate and assist where it is necessary. In Limpopo, for example, something that is very important, that is very encouraging, that happened. Pixley. Yeah, sorry, Pixley. It's just a typo. And we also have received a report from Limpopo. And so what I'm trying to say is that we, from the social development point of view, we are also requesting provinces to submit their post-launch reports so that we can be able to identify achievements and challenges and see how we can work together with the provinces to be able to address these challenges but also strengthen the weaknesses. There was also a question around the acceleration of the training of social workers. Perhaps I could hasten to indicate that the Department of Social Development is rolling out bursaries for the training of social workers. The challenge that we are experiencing as a department is that universities have got a particular a quota. So what we need is more than the quota that universities can accommodate. So it becomes a challenge. But as a department, we're also looking at other social service professionals, because we've got also community development practitioners, youth care workers. So we're looking at fast-tracking and building the capacity of all social service professionals, because when we implement an integrated approach, you actually need all these service professionals to be able to also facilitate their own programs. So we are not only focusing on social workers, but also on others. And then we are working very closely with the municipality, because the municipality has got this very strong component of community development workers. And so that linkage also strengthens the capacity at the community level.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms.
On those DG, those projects that have been in existence, in terms of the outcomes or the progress so far, can we just get a commitment in terms of you coming back to the committee on that, and then also giving us just a rundown of the progress, but also the challenges of the projects in the different provinces. Because what you see, the benefit of engaging a committee like ours is we all have constituencies. Now, you would heard Member Lamula talking around Western Cape, Member Nelson around Northwest, Honourable Member Kiza about Gauteng, KZN. So we can then assist the committee in terms of going back to our constituencies and see how we can look at unclogging those hiccups. How can the committee assist without intervening in the work of government? But because we all bought into the war, we all want to see a reduction in poverty. So what is our role in our constituencies as members of parliament to see that this program is in the presence in terms of rewards that we can really assist to make it a success?
We commit to that, Chair. I've been trying furiously to get the details, but I would work through Adi so that she would supply the members exactly for each province, because except for the Northwest, for the reason that I've indicated, that there is at the leadership level, the province, the PEC has agreed, but then the PEC instructed the Office of the Premier to go to the municipalities to yet confirm. And at the district level, I mean, there is that haggling into saying include more. And we've been advised by the policy unit in the presidency to say, given the time as well as the resources at hand, we've got to sort of temper with the ambitions, but it's been very, very difficult. So for Northwest only, but for the rest of the provinces, maybe Eastern Cape will address it slightly later, Chair, has got a different problem. But for the rest of the provinces, we now have the ward, the municipalities, and the extent to which we've, because there's a stage, we train, and after training we profile, after profiling we deliver the services, having referred to the departments and begin to monitor. We think we would welcome the assistance that we could get from the committee in terms of unlocking certain blockages that we do have. I have said for the Eastern Cape, it's separate because we, in that one, we have had to solicit the support of the Deputy President to assist us. There are certain problems that are there that require the intervention at that level. In the Northwest, we had thought we had just moved until yesterday. It was reported in our national task team that the colleague couldn't give us exactly, because we were saying, you're giving us the district and the municipalities, we want to know the wards. She said that's still being processed at the political level in the council. So again, that, but we do have the proposals. So we're thinking for the minimum, if the councils could agree to say, let's proceed and not stop the work, and we could add if and when an agreement is reached. But that's tradition, that's almost universal as a practice. Wherever we appear, most of the councillors would like their wards to be included.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say to the department, it's not that we are trying to do, we are becoming harsh to you. Please accept us. We want to assist you, because whenever these regions and this province are making reports to you, they are making street reports. And then when you go down there to this area, you don't get all what is written there. Now, we would like you to provide us with, I don't know whether it's possible, Chair, to provide us with that information, so that whenever we are in these areas, one, information number one is to give us all the provinces and what has been done. Then when we go there, we'll simply go to that place, Khagata village, and then we look at, has that really happened? Assisting you, because you cannot be all over the world. I mean the country. And another thing, we need really to look at the monitoring and evaluation. You know, there is a crisis of these trucks which are doing delivering services to the rural areas. They have been stopped in one of the provinces by saying it's hard to maintain them. So they cannot no longer work. In this particular local office, which is serving 5-6 towns, there is a G1 golf, a golf one, which cannot go to the deep rural area. And then the truck is parked there because there's no money to maintain it. So those are the small things which are blocking the government and are making people to say the government is not delivering services. And yet, it's those people who are responsible. So let us assist
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it is a very clear program and is a very good program. We definitely support it. But just want to have a little question, I can say, about when the implementation has been done, had to take the medium term. You said in profile, you go to the community profiling, which is in the IDP. It is the IDP of the municipality. Therefore, to me, I seem as if it's other way, because once the ITP has been made, I don't think, because all the community has been part of the ITP, and then the ITP takes 5 years. Maybe after a year, there is a reviewing of the ITP, but not any changes in the ITP. How are you just go inside to the IDP and change and put what has been coming to the community is what the question that I was want to ask, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could answer the question raised by the Honourable Member regarding the places and the wards in Gauteng. In Gauteng, we are covering Mirafong City, Mfuleni, and the wards in Mirafong City is Ward 3. In Mfuleni, we are covering Ward 28, 27. In Western area, I think the name might be not exactly that, but it's Ward 10. In Mirafong City, is the largest that we are covering in terms of numbers. Ward 1, Ward 8, Ward 9, Ward 3. And then Mohale City, we are covering Ward 25, Ward 32, Ward 16, and then Mfuleni, that's the last one, we are covering 38. In as far as KZN is concerned, certainly Inotu is there. If I could go there, Madam Chair. For this year, we are covering in Inotu, we are in Inkanga. The ward is what in Inkanga alone we are supposed to be covering what 2, 13, 8, 14, 9, and 7. And then then we've got Umlalazi, Utwinutungulu, what 3, Ulundi, we are covering Ward 2, Ward 1, Ward 5, Ward 6, Ward 16, Ward 24, Umsinga, we are covering Ward 3, Ward 9, Ward 7, Ward 1, Ward 5, Ward 4, Ward 6, Ward 14, and Ward 8. In as far as Ward 8, Chair, if I could, and Ward 6, and Ward 9, we had already gone there for the 30. But what we now do in terms of the rollout, we no longer go for a sample of 30 households. We do the rest of the ward. It's exactly like what you are now doing in Giane, except that for the Department of Rural Development, they just want to pilot with 10. But from the perspective of the war on poverty, we now do the rest of the ward. It's Ward 18 where Greater Giane and the pilot is, but we do the rest of it. Muyeshe village is just 1 out of 6. We are going to be doing the rest of the 6 in terms of the program, and then we'll give the department what it wants in terms of it. Now, I've just counted these that are there, but I could give, but it's exactly what I'm committing to the committee, that we would give this for the rest of the provinces in terms of the ward for this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Up to the proposal, that's where I was from now to the cabinet, was saying we're proposing to run it up to 2014, mm-hmm. and we're giving all those, but we started with for this financial year, and we're giving that, we'll give over to the that information to the committee, as well as what we have done so far. Maybe the challenge is where we would appreciate the assistance one way or the other from the committee members. The other issue, Chair, if I got it from, what was it? Maybe she will take that.
Okay, thanks. Let me respond to the issue of the IDPs and integrated development planning. In terms of integrated development planning and how integrated service delivery fits within the IDPs, there's short term, there's medium, and there's long term. And if you look at currently the way the IDPs are, focus is more on infrastructure than on the social elements of integrated planning. So this process is also enabling municipalities to be able to integrate within their IDPs social development issues that are often not very strong in the IDPs. So in the short, when they review the IDPs, we make sure that all these issues that have been identified are mainstreamed during the review of the IDP processes. At the moment as a department, because we also have identified the fact that social development has not really been very much represented within the IDP processes, we have trained about 100 CDPs to ensure that they are able to participate in the IDP processes and factor in all these elements that have not been very strong within the IDP processes. And we are working very close with COCTA, Department of Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs, to review and to look at those social elements. At this point in time, we are looking at mainstreaming social cohesion as one of the KPIs or the key performance indicators for municipalities. So all these in the midterm, in the short, medium to long term, those issues that emanate from the profiles, we look at how they can be factored in now and during the review processes and even in the long term.
Thank you very much, Ms. Luka and Gigi Bongwa. Am I right?
Mbongwa.
Mbongwa. For your presentation, I think the presentations are quite detailed. So it really gives us a picture of what you are doing. And then we're looking forward to further engagement, especially when we get the project planned. I don't think we should get the raw project plan, but at least know what is happening in every province. With detailed, obviously, outcomes and objectives. And also, obviously, monitoring and evaluation. In terms of your project plan, those issues will be built in. I think Honorable Ramula also captured on the communication plan of how do you communicate this forum of poverty to the targeted areas. And that's really important, because I think your presentation here today is also part of that communication plan to a very important constituency or a stakeholder, because I think the committee is also a stakeholder in a way. So we will be engaging you again at another time. If you could communicate and just exchange some contact numbers. If you have some business cards, please leave it with the committee secretary to so that the members could also be engaged you on an individual basis when it suits them. And we will then we'll have a follow-up meeting. I don't know how far she can get this information to us. We know that the Northwest is still outstanding, but it means there's eight provinces that are ready. So that is fine. If we could have it by the end of October, is that reasonable? Okay. Thank you very much. Honorable members, we've given opportunity to the two teams to leave us. But what you have in front of you before I close this meeting is just the program of the committee for the month of October. We've had the briefing by the UNFPA today, as well as the briefing by the department. You didn't. It was given to you. Yeah, it was emailed to all members. We all had emails, right? So the 20th, we've got the RAA, the industry, they want to present the SA Liquor Industry Play Charts in Parliament. You remember we were supposed to meet with them last end of September? Yeah. The Industry Association for Responsible Alcohol Use. That presentation, it's going to be a long print, it's still a long print, at the Ezekiel SA National Art Gallery, just here after the gate. We basically just walk 2 minutes here at the gate. Is it on the screen? Everything will be arranged. They will be transport to the villages. Not a problem. They said they'll pay for it. So it's no cost to the community. And then we will be also be adopting the minutes, and we will also be adopting the minutes of this committee meeting next week. And then on the 27th, we will be having the annual report briefing by the Department of Social Development. You remember the annual report time? And then we'll take it every week. We will have a meeting because there will be SASA, the NDA, and the CDA. Remember, there's the spark of the three entities, so we'll be having the hearing. And then we'll end in November, the 11th, the 17th of November, we'll be ending our program with a visit to the staff. Right? But between in terms of our oversight budget, we need to go out. We need to the Western Cape. We need to have that report. I think we should just make that part of the 20th report, the oversight board. It's with the members here, but we should just adopt it. Honourable members, Ma'am Kiza, you talk to the out of order. That we need to look at our oversight visits where we want to go. And I want to make two proposals that we visit Mr. Malanga. I was thinking that just near the border of Mozambique and Swaziland, especially with the issues of traditional leaders, the migration issues, and so on, SASA, that we move away from the city centres, that you'd rather go really into the rural area. And I think you've heard committees going to other provinces, but Mpumalanga doesn't seem to be on the radar. So I want to propose that we visit that area, and then we also look at the Eastern Cape, but also target the very, you remember we said the CDC in those areas. We still keep to that. And we then take those two areas for our oversight. We just need to work it out for a week, we want to go, because we can even, if we say that maybe we can leave on the 11th and come back 5 or 6 days later for Mulanga visit. And then come back to East Cape early next year. I don't think that is something that we would like that. Because we can then push in the adoption of all committee reports to the 10th, maybe just a morning, and we'll have a committee meeting somewhere. And we can actually get, if we balance our act, we can be in time for the last meeting before we go on the recess of Christmas. Do members agree with that?
Yeah.
We'll then circulate the justice program to you. Is that fine? Thank you, honourable members. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.